All right, good afternoon. The Audible Izzy is on the air, presented by our good friends at Aquafina. Good day here. Kim Bocamper with you. Associate head coach, special teams coordinator Darren Rizzi with us. And Darren, you guys, it's been a little bit of the off season for you here, but it's getting ready to crank up a little more. You've been spending a lot of time around here, but you did get a little time off to catch your breath after the season, huh?
Yeah, I was sleeping beauty for a couple of days, for sure. Yeah. No, it was good. I got a little downtime, refreshed, ready to go, and now kind of back at it. We're doing some self-evaluation right now and some free agency stuff, and so right back at it.
What do you go through mentally, just like the players? You know, the one thing about getting to the playoffs in the National Football League, it ends fast.
Yeah.
You know, one day you're there and you're planning for what you're going to do next week, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's over and you go. And for players, it's tough to how about coaches? How about the end of the season for you guys?
It's the same, because the season always comes to a weird end, because it's one of those deals where you're preparing to play that next week.
Yep.
And we're playing the Steelers, and I have every intention of coming back in and getting on the plane and watching the film and figuring out who we're playing next week and getting right at it. So, you know, same thing. It comes to a very abrupt end, and you get into such a routine. I mean, we start training camp in July, and then you get just into a daily routine, and then all of a sudden that routine gets, boom.
Yeah.
It kind of comes to an end. And it's kind of like, all right, you know, then the head man and gives us a couple days off, and I'm sitting at home, and, you know, it's like, what am I doing today?
Yeah.
And things like that. So it becomes a strange deal.
Yeah.
It, you know, as they say, as you know, it only ends well for one team.
Yeah,
right?
That's the only, you know, that's why I say, you know, there's only one team that gets a smile at the end of the season.
There's only one team that's happy
that's
at the
it,
end.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it is a little bit of a bizarre deal, but, so a little bit of downtime, you know, spend some time with my kids and start watching some of their sporting events and things like that. And then right back, come back. And we have a kind of a plan in place. The combine's in 2 weeks. And so we're starting to get ready for that. And free agency obviously starts up here, you know, in a few weeks as well. And so there's kind of a plan in place for the evaluation. The first thing we do is evaluate our own, you know, evaluate our own players. Each coach kind of goes through an evaluation process that Coach Gase set up. And then, you know, we kind of do a scheme evaluation. So right now we're kind of in the middle of that and going through every phase. For me, it's obviously the special teams, going through and looking at all the different phases, what we did well, what we didn't do well, what we think we need to improve on, and kind of working through that.
Yeah. You're watching the Audible here. If you're watching us, you're watching it on Periscope. At the bottom of your Periscope page, you can go ahead and send a message in, send any questions you'd like. We'll get them answered as we go through the program. You can see us on a rebroadcast beginning tomorrow on the Miami Dolphins Facebook page, and a little bit later today, you can catch us on MiamiDolphins.com. Hey, Coach, let's talk about the offseason and what, as a coach, what your responsibility are. You got the scouts that are going out there and looking at the college players. You've got scouts that are looking at the pro players that are becoming free agents, but you participate in all that stuff too. You guys all participate in free agency, the combine, all those things that go on. What responsibilities, away from your normal coaching guys in the meeting rooms, are added to you that you go through this period of time as a coach in the National Football League?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, it's really a big evaluation period.
Yeah.
You know, first you evaluate your own and kind of say, hey, obviously every team has free agents. You got to make decisions on your own guys. You know, which spots do we need to fill? So we kind of go through that. Then it starts in really to the free agency and the college draft process. And so for me, this kind of offseason, as a special teams coach particularly, I'm looking at a lot of different guys.
Yeah.
Looking throughout the league at different guys who can help us, you know, both sides of the ball. Looking at specialists, obviously.
Yeah.
And then you start looking, that's the National Football League guys. Then you go to the college guys and start looking at a bunch of different guys. And I'll tell you what, we really, Chris Greer does a phenomenal job with the scouting end of it and kind of setting up a process in place. So every position coach is obviously watching their different positions. What you're doing is the linebacker coach, for example, is going to watch the linebackers. You're going to go through and do all that and kind of grade them in a grading scale, and you're going to rank them and do all those types of things. And so, like I said, the combine's come up in a couple of weeks. We just got the list of the guys that will be there. So between now and I'll go out to the combine, I believe it's the 28th, I'll get a chance to look at as many guys as I can.
So you'll do a little pre-work on them.
Preview. Yeah. So, you know, when I see John Smith come up, for example, I've seen John Smith at least in some tape, and I kind of have an idea. The other thing is, there's the interview process at the combine. You and I were talking off the air a little bit about how I feel. That's maybe one of the most important things.
Yeah.
The NFL Combine is the interview process. So you want to be able to talk football with, you know, John Smith.
Yep.
And so if you're able to watch some of his as much as you can watch, you can interact with that particular player about, hey, you have him in an interview and you only have him for so long.
Yeah.
people, you know, I think people think that at the combine you can keep this guy locked in a room. No, it's very time.
There's only a certain amount you can do.
Yeah, there's only so much.
Limited amount of guys and a certain amount of time you've got with each guy.
It's exactly right. So you got it's got to be a very, very detailed process that you do. And so because of that, we want to try to get as much background information leading up to the interview so we're asking the right questions. We're not wasting the time. Yep. And so that's a big part of what we're doing.
Hey, Coach, the other thing, the thing that's really, I think, nice about this year, you built a foundation this last season with this football team. You changed the culture around in this locker room and on this football team. And I think that culture really extended out to the fans. I think you could see the fans kind of changing their attitude a little bit about this football team. And something we haven't had in a long time in this organization, continuity in the coaching staff, where you guys stayed, you know, Vance Joseph, you hated to lose him, but you knew he was going to be a hot commodity out there as a head coaching candidate. You put Matt Burke, he moves into his spot as a defensive coordinator. Matt's been here. Terminology is going to stay, you know, scheme-wise for the most part is going to change, probably maybe some little changes, same on offense, defense, and special teams. And how important and how much of a head start does that give you guys going in to next year, knowing that there's not going to be – people aren't going to have to relearn terminology, relearn schemes, relearn those different things. How much of a head start does that give you as opposed to what we've seen a number of times over the last decade?
Yeah, it's huge. And you know, and in 8 years I've been here, there's always been some turnover. I think this might be the least amount of turnover we've ever had as a staff. And I think, like you said, continuity is a big thing. And I think – you know, Vance, obviously, great job by him getting a head coaching job. But, you know, I think the fans are really going to like what Matt does on defense. He'll add his own wrinkles, obviously, like you said. But for the most part, the scheme's in place. Yeah. And the reason that's so important is because you have these, you know, we had a fair amount of young players last year as well. And so these young guys have played under a scheme. If they had to go through a whole nother offseason of a new scheme, it's like starting over. It's, you know, and it doesn't matter how good of an athlete you are, learning a new scheme, and you probably went through it a bunch of times as a player as well.
I didn't.
Really?
No, we had the same coach. So I had the same coaching staff my whole career.
College as well?
No. From college to the pros.
Yeah.
But in the NFL, my whole career, we had one coaching staff.
How about
we had the same terminology every week. We had the same. I mean,
look
every
how
year
successful
same,
you guys were.
Well, that has a lot. And we'll look at New England. I'm sure New England's not changing terminology. You know, that's a consistency. And you look at like the Pittsburghs. You look at the New Englands. You look at those teams that have had success long term, and you point back to that. To me, I look at the continuity of the coaching staff and how important that is to carry over down to the players. I'm just happy to see it happening here, and hopefully continue to have it to grow like
I agree with that. And how about when you were at San Jose? Did you have any changes of coaches there?
You know, I went to three schools in 4 years during college,
so
I had a lot of changes. Yeah.
So you had some changes. So, you've been.
Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, the point is the more continuity you have and as the coaches stay and the scheme stays the same. Listen, I'd like to think that's why we've been able to have some success on special teams.
Yep.
You know, I've been here now a while, and I like to think, and we have new players every year that filter in. There's no doubt. I mean, you look at this past year, we had a lot of rookies, but you look at some of those veteran guys that are playing the same scheme and all that. There's a lot to be said for it. I think it's one of the things that gets overlooked the most.
No doubt about it. And the other thing, Coach, and I always believe this, and I believe this back from when I was playing. You know, I came in the league first couple years, we didn't go to the playoffs. Then we snuck in the playoffs and by chance got beat up pretty good by Pittsburgh. But you know, we came back the next year with an attitude, hey, we're a playoff team now. We're a team. So we're starting at a different level. And you know, you expect more out of yourself coming get back after that. But you also feel confident in the base that you've created, that you're stepping off at a higher level. And so I think the personality of the players you have, the attitude of the players that you have in this football team, I think they'll go through that the proper way, not feeling like they deserve anything, but knowing that they've created something here that they can build on now and start from a higher level.
Yeah, I would agree with that, totally, especially with the guys that we have in leadership roles, guys like Cam Wake and Ryan Tannehill, guys that have been around and know Mike Pouncey. They won't let the locker room get out of control with that stuff. And the other thing is, I think the fans should understand is where it really helps you the most, in my opinion, is in your OTAs and this time of year. Last year, when we're taking the field for OTAs, we are literally square one with a new scheme on offense and defense.
Yep.
And now, so that whole entire process is brand new.
Yep.
And you're doing – everything's brand new. You know, we have 10 OTA practices, so every installation in offense and defense is a new one.
Yes.
Now, with the veteran guys back, the returning players – the starting point at OTAs is so much different than where it was last year. And now you're able to do more. You can get you can get more creative. You can do more, you know, add more wrinkles. And sure, there's going to be new players that have to catch up and everything else. But it really is. It really helps you jumpstart your program for sure.
All right, you're watching the Audible here. If you're watching it, you're watching on Periscope. You can send your questions in at the bottom. You can also watch us on a delayed broadcast on the Miami Dolphins Facebook page beginning tomorrow. And you can watch us on MiamiDolphins.com a little bit later today. I want to thank our good friends from Aquafina for sponsoring the program here. Coach, you're a New Jersey guy.
That was right on cue, by the way.
That is right there. You're New Jersey. I got to need to ask you a New Jersey question.
I love it. Okay. Let's go.
You can only pick one.
Uh-oh.
Taylor ham and cheese sandwich, a Jimmy Buff's hot dog, Rutz Hut hot dog, or a New Jersey sloppy Joe, roast beef sloppy Joe, New Jersey. So.
It's an easy one for me, actually. Taylor ham and cheese is my all-time.
That's it?
Taylor, that's my go-to. That's my go-to. Taylor ham all the way. Although there's a... The Rutz Hut, Rutz Hut's a tough one. Rutz Hut's a really, really good spot. That's why when you said that, but Taylor ham and cheese is my, that's my old
I was introduced to Taylor ham and cheese up in Point Pleasant on the Jersey boardwalk.
Oh, yeah.
On the boardwalk at Jenkins's.
So, yeah. And now my best friend growing up is actually the principal of Point Pleasant High School.
Oh, really?
So I make it a point to go up there. We're hitting the boardwalk and we're going Taylor ham all the time, no doubt.
Let's grab a couple questions here. Light in the dome. How much of a luxury is it to have both Jakeem Grant and Kenyon Drake coming back to work on return kicks? Both those guys come back and compete, and Jakeem certainly competing for a spot on the roster. I think Kenyon, has done enough to show that he's, got a pretty good leg up there, but still got to go out and play to get the job done.
Yeah, no doubt. We're going through the offseason stuff right now, so we're going back and watching all the cutups. The one thing that's really interesting, and it happened towards the second half of the season on our kick returns, we obviously had them both back there, and to watch teams – which guy were they going to kick to? And we were actually talking about this in a scouting meeting the other day. One of the things I think gets lost in we won that Jets game on Kenyon Drake's kick return. I think you may forget, people easily forget that was a re-kick.
Yes.
The play before that, they kicked to Jakeem. He made about eight guys miss.
Right,
the play lasted forever. And then it was a penalty, so we made them re-kick it. Well, because of what Jakeem did on the play before, the Jets opted to kick it to Kenyon.
Right.
And then Kenyon goes to the house.
Yeah.
And you can look back at that and say, well, maybe if Jakeem didn't do it's to have a double-headed monster back there and, it's so to speak, and have both those guys is great. I mean, Jakeem obviously made a bunch of big plays.
Yeah.
He obviously, is very good in the open field. I'm sure the fans know, and we know he's got to get better secure in the football decision-making. Kenyon didn't get as many opportunities, but certainly when he did have the opportunities, he had some big, big plays. He had a huge return, as we mentioned, the Jets game, San Fran. He had a big return in the playoff game. But certainly, Jakeem, for a guy that only did this for the first time in his life as a punt returner, listen, we knew there was going to be some peaks and valleys. No one expected it to be perfect first go around. But I think this offseason will be big for him. I think he can definitely learn from some of the mistakes he made. But by the same time, when you look back, you look back at that Tennessee return he had. He returned another one against the Jets that got called back. He had some other big plays that there were some penalties on. So it's definitely nice to have them both. I mean, think about this time last year, we had neither of them on our team.
Yep.
And now all of a sudden you have some guys, and when you take those guys and you add a guy like Jarvis into the mix and you have kind of a mixed bag of returners, it really makes my job as a special teams coach a lot easier, because there's been years here where I didn't know who the returner was going to be. Now you have for because we didn't have any.
Yep.
Now, we may not know who the returner is because we have a bunch of them. That's a good problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no doubt.
The other thing, too, is you like Jakeem, if he can move with OTAs and get ahead, I'd like to see him get involved in the offense a little more, because he is a guy that he's got that ability and space to do things. And I could just know Adam Gay's got some ideas in the back of his head where he can use him, but get him comfortable where he's at on special teams, know what he does. And I think this year is a year for him probably maybe get a little chance to see what we can do offensively in some specialty situations.
Yeah, no doubt.
For you guys.
And as you know, sometimes a guy's biggest jump is from that year one to year two.
Yep.
It's, once you get a year under your belt in a lot of different, those rookies get stretched out in a lot of different ways. They're here early, they're here late. It's a long season for those guys. They've never gone through this long of a season. So usually the second go around where they're not getting spread as thin, you see a lot of different results, and I expect that out of Jakeem.
Coach, I saw yesterday the Giants released a couple players. A couple of their guys were free agents, so then they just they made some moves. How does a team decide when you make those moves with guys that are on your roster that you may not want moving forward, or free agents that you want to try to get under contract? How does that time frame work for you guys?
Yeah, well, first of all, I know that there's a lot of the ins and outs of contracts that I'm not privy to or all caught up on, but I know that does have something to do with it, the time to release. The other thing is, I think some organizations want to give, you know, as they approach free agency, they want to get a true idea of where their salary cap space is going to be and that kind of thing. And then the other thing is to just give guys opportunities, you know, to go out and to do that. So I think every individual situation might be different, whether it's the contract, the individual team. But obviously, as we approach the start of free agency here March 9th, you'll see a lot of teams now, you know, have to make some tough decisions on that. And that's every team, you know, that's across the board. You have to figure out where your needs are and where you think going into the offseason you're going to do the most, you know, need the most improvement. So, you know, it really varies, but I don't think there's one constant way. I think every team kind of differs here.
The other thing is you've got the personnel guys working, coaches working with guys. The balance between free agency and the draft, you get some guy in free agency, all of a sudden your draft board may change a little bit because of we got a guy here that – How does that timing and balance work with that, making those decisions free agent wise, and then I guess you just kind of follow up with the draft afterwards and kind of let after all the smoke clears, here's what we got left.
You know, I think what most teams do, Bo, is you kind of have your offensive defensive depth charts and you kind of line them up and say, okay, you know, this particular position, you know, we have this guy, but we have a need here, or this position we're pretty good at. So you kind of have a needs board, if you will. And then as you go through free agency, you might be able to fill some of those needs. And if you fill some of those needs in, and I think across the board for most teams are going to fill in those particular needs in free agency. And the ones they don't obviously become more of a priority as the draft rolls around. Yeah. And then, you know, once the draft is through and you still feel like you because what you see is there's always a period of time when the draft is over where you see more free agents get signed because either through the first round of free agency and the draft, if a team feels like they didn't fill all the particular needs they need, you might see another slew of that, maybe the second level free agents, if you will.
Isn't there like a June 1st release or something that goes on there too?
Exactly. You'll end up seeing some free agents that don't get signed maybe right away that are waiting to see, hey, this guy's going to be a guy that we're going to wait and see how the draft goes, and then he might be a second level, whatever you want to term it. But it is an interesting dynamic, though. Yeah. But you kind of fill the needs, whether you fill that need with a free agent or a rookie, you're going to have to meet it in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, no doubt. A lot of work to be done over there, and it's amazing how this job, the business of the game never ends. you get done on a Sunday or a Saturday, whatever game day you happen to play in the postseason, and then you're back at it before you can bat an eye.
No doubt. I think I still have some friends and relatives that wonder what I do in the off season. I think somewhere along the way, I still have those. I think I have an aunt somewhere that says, "Now, what do you do when the season's over?" I'm
like, you know, it's funny. I used to, because like I said, when I was with Coach Shula the whole time, and his staff was pretty much the same the whole time through my career. And I remember my defensive line coach, a guy named Mike Scarry. He was a great, great guy, great coach. And after about 3 or 4 years, I'd see him during the offseason. I said, "Mo, what do you guys? You guys are here like 8 hours a day during the offseason. What do you do?" He says, "Well, we got a lot of work to do. You know, we take our playbook and we start from page one, take it out, redo it, and we go through our whole playbook and do everything." I go, "Okay." So I'd see him about the second day of training camp. I go, "Mo, this is the same damn playbook we've used for the last week. If you redid this whole playbook during the offseason, you haven't done anything. You may have redone the pages, but all you did was recopied them and put them back in the book to start over again." But we're
definitely not in here playing Trivia Pursuit and checkers.
Sid the Kid here says, asks a question. "Frank's had a lot of pressure kicks. How do you prepare him for those types of situations?"
Yeah, great question. I mean, you know, the thing about field goal kickers in practice, it's a very, very unique, dynamic because I've been a special teams coach for a long time now. And I think when I was a younger coach, you would just go out there and just kick field goals. And, all right, this guy can make them here. What I've tried to do as I've gone through, you know, my career is set up situations in practice where you can try to simulate some tough situations. So we do something interesting that I think we do here that, you know, it's really not a big secret, but it's something that I like to do is I like to bring the kickers out of practice for like one rep or two reps. lining up and kicking 10 field goals in a row. It's like going to the driving range. You're eventually going to hit a good one.
You got a bag
of
balls sitting there next to you. You're going to hit a good one at some point.
Yeah, you're going to hit one of the ones going to be good. So what I like to do is try to simulate game situations and bring the guy out. And Coach Gase is great with this. We'll be in the middle of team periods, we'll blow a whistle. Field goal, one rep, miss or make. I mean, that's what that's reality. That's the most realistic situation. So, we've done that a lot with Franks. The other thing is we try to set up, situations that can come up in the game. You take the Buffalo Bills game, for example. He makes that long, the clock is running, end of the game, fourth quarter. That's something we practice, every week. We do that once a week in practice. And even if he is not kicking that on that particular day, because kickers are a lot like pitchers, if you will. They're not going to go out and, kick bang ball every day. And you're going to end up being, wear yourself out. So even if he's not kicking on that particular day, we'll still go through the situation. It's still a mentality, a mental approach, getting the dynamics down, getting the situation down. So, I know I've been asked this before by a bunch of people is, that situation at the end of the Buffalo game was kind of hairy. But the thing I was proud about is you watch our guys take the field and it was kind of like, business as usual. Yeah, yeah. We had done it before. We got out, we got lined up and we looked like we were, in complete control and he ends up making a big kick and that was great. And obviously had a couple of game winners, the one in Buffalo and then the one in Arizona in the pouring rain. The crazy thing about the Arizona one is we were literally on that Thursday or Friday doing wet ball drills and doing things. We had just practiced the snap, hold, kick with a whole slew of wet balls. And so really there's only so much you can do. But to give Andrew credit, I mean, he's got a great mentality. He's not a guy that panics much about anything in life. God bless him. And he's always kind of has that mentality where it's kind of even keel. And so he goes out there. I think he kind of treats every kick the same. I know it's easier said than done. I think he doesn't try to overthink things. And so he's got a really good mentality for a kicker.
You're watching the Audible here presented by our good friends at Aquafina. You're watching on Periscope. You can send your questions in. We'll ask them. We go through. Another thing, Coach, kickoffs now. People still kind of trying to decide best thing kickoff wise. Do you kick it short, make the guy run back, try to stop him inside the 20? Do you let him? Your thoughts on? It's been a couple of years now. You've been going through this.
Yeah.
Has your mind changed any on that type of a situation?
Yeah. I think there's a lot of factors that go into it. I mean, obviously the weather is number one. Number two, really has a lot to do with the game plan, the team you're playing. Who's their guy that's going to get the ball in his hands. The fans probably know that follow us. There's some weeks where we kicked it short, and there's some weeks where we kicked it deep on purpose and vice versa. And so, they're also a big part of it is the situation of the game. I mean, take the Super Bowl, for example. Mm-hmm. Those last three kicks that New England, the last three kicks New England had, they kicked it high and short on purpose, and they actually got great field position out of it, and that's one of the things that gets lost a little bit with the Super Bowl is New England kicked it high and short, and Atlanta was kind of playing the onside kick a little bit, and they had some guys up, and so they didn't have a lot of guys back, and they kicked it high and short and got really – New England did a good job. Atlanta ended up with bad field position. So a lot of it has to do with are you winning, what's the score? Yep. Sometimes you don't want to give a team an opportunity to return one. Some teams you're looking to pin them back because you're looking to create a little field position advantage. And so, I think that the rule this year, I thought there may be – going into it, I thought there might be a little bit more – returns than I thought, but I think as the season went on, I think that a lot of teams were satisfied with taking a knee and going out to the 25 if the ball was in the end zone. And then I think a lot of teams, once you get stung by, if you're, and I know this as a coach because this happened to me, if you get stung by another team's, your kickoff team gets stung for a big return, you get a little bit gun-shy.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, kicking it high and short, you're like, I don't want them to run it out to the 40 or you might as well just, and so you get comfortable and so... I'm proud to say that, I thought we did a good job with this season. When we did kick it short, usually we did a good job of tackling down inside the 25. We weren't 100%, but we were pretty darn good on it. But it is. I actually think it creates an interesting game plan
thing. It's a different dynamic. It brings a thought process. I remember when it started, when it was guys, okay, look, line up by the end line. If you can catch the ball running forward, then take it out.
Right.
If you can't catch it running forward, then take a knee and go. Now it's now are they going to kick it short? I think it's they're trying to get away from the kickoff as much as they can.
Yeah, no question.
But they make the changes and it creates a different dynamic.
It does.
And the interesting thing for me to watch, as a guy away from it, is watching how these rules change and watching how the league adapts to those rules and figure out how to take a rule and turn it from a negative maybe
into a positive
that we can use.
Yeah, and listen, touchbacks were slightly up this year and concussions were slightly down this year on the play. And so, you know what? The NFL is probably saying, hey, it's trending the way we want it to trend. Yeah. It was slightly down here and slightly up there. And so, you know, I know it was only a one-year rule and they had to vote on it again. But my gut would tell me that they'll probably keep it the same only because those two trends, the concussions and then obviously the touchbacks were going in the way they wanted them to go. Yeah. And so, but I was talking about this the other day, the one that gets crazy, and it happened a lot this year because of the new rule, is the ball that lands like right on the goal line. Because the returner obviously is looking up for the ball. And a lot of times those guys kind of
not sure exactly where they are.
Am I in or am I out? Yep. And you saw it probably, you know, umpteen times this year where the guy's right on the goal line and he ends up, hey, I'm not sure if I'm in, and he takes it out.
And gets to the 5-yard line.
And gets tackled inside of 10.
Yeah.
You know, so that creates it. And so kickers have become pretty good
at dropping it right there.
Dropping it right down on the goal line.
It's amazing how kickers have trained. It used to be just bang it out there and now you got all these different things: the kicks with the backspin on them, the punts, all the different things. It's just interesting to watch how with the rule changes things change. One other thing you touched on the concussions a little bit, and I don't want to get into it because it's a situation that the water's a little muddy and people take things one way or another way. But in your mind, in what the league has done over the last number of years to try to help alleviate those situations. Yeah. Are you seeing headway? Are you seeing benefits in what's being done rule-wise and training-wise and taking these guys off the field and making sure they go through the protocol and all these types of things? Are you seeing it benefit players from a health standpoint?
I am.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. I think the first thing is the way that I've seen the coaches have to adapt to the rules and the way you have to coach different things. Take the defenseless player rule, for example. You know, that's obviously one of the rules that they really thought would help lead to less concussions. And it has, and because, listen, no one wants that 15-yard penalty.
Right.
Now, whether you agree with the rule, don't agree with the rule, whatever, take that part out of it. But the way you have to coach hitting the quarterback, the way you have to coach hitting receivers, the way you have to coach blocking on returns, all those things where there's defenseless, people – it changes the way. And so guys have learned to get their pads down and not hit guys up by the head area. And so that's one reason.
Yep.
The second thing is on the sideline, when a guy does come out and he's potentially, got dinged or whatever you want to call it, there's the process you can tell is completely different.
Yes.
Now I know that's the way the NFL wants it. And I've really seen it go that way. Now I know there's been individual situations where, maybe it didn't go exactly the way they wanted it, but I've seen a big difference on the sideline. Yeah. And I really believe that player safety has definitely come to the forefront.
Well, look, I'm down there on the sidelines and there's been times where I've stood behind a guy when he's going through the protocol and I watch him go through the protocol. Yes or no questions. Yes or no questions. And I actually was standing next to one of the doctors, the league doctor that administers those, after your trainer, then the league's unbiased guy steps in, does his deal. Yeah. And I was standing next to a guy and actually talking to him while he was going through his check sheet of after, did you ask this? Yes. Did you do this? Yes. Did you do this? So it's interesting to see that protocol that they go through before they let these guys go back on the field. So it's got to be, at least from my mind, I think you see more. You see guys might leave the game more with symptoms, but that's a byproduct of making sure they don't have
correct
before you get them back out in the field again. And I think it's for the good of everybody. But I tell you what I see from my standpoint. I see a lot of times now the receiver is not getting hurt, but maybe the two DBs that are converging on him because they're trying to get away from
friendly fire from hitting him in the wrong.
And next thing you know, they're banging heads.
Yeah, that's happened.
And Walt Akins, I think, at the end of the series, was it Walt in Buffalo? Who was it towards the end of the game? Two of your guys.
Was it Rambo?
Two DBs. It may have been Lacari Rambo.
Yeah,
but it's the same type of thing.
Right. The same that thing happens.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
As a defensive player, the one thing, That's what to me has got to be is so difficult as a defensive player. At some point, you got to commit, right? I commit. I'm gonna commit and I'm gonna aim for you, and if I'm aiming for you here, and all of a sudden you decide that I'm gonna curl up a little bit.
Totally.
Now my target goes from here to here. Now I'm in the danger zone.
No doubt. And listen, when a guy's going...
And once I committed, there's nothing I can do about
nothing
it.
Nothing you can do. I was going to say, people don't realize sometimes the speed in which these guys are traveling.
Right. Yeah.
And once they lower their pad level to a certain amount, that offensive player lowers himself 6 inches.
Change.
So that's why I think sometimes I don't agree with every, you know, I know fans are going to be shocked. I don't agree with the ref's call sometimes. but you know, I don't necessarily agree with every single time it's called. That there's a bunch that I disagree with. But at the same time, I understand that player safety is a number one, and it should be. But sometimes, you know, in the heat of the battle and guys are traveling at these speeds, you know, so to me, there's some blatant ones.
Yeah.
And there's ones that are very,
the gray area.
Ones.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, you know, the college rule now has gone to it where it's a reviewable play.
Right. Every play.
So they throw it and they throw a guy out of the game.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's been being taken very seriously and as it should. And I think, you know, the numbers are proven so.
So, you know, my whole thing as a player would have been, okay, that's fine. I'm going to try to do this, you know, and maybe, and I know I can make a clean tackle here, but I'm going to do this. And maybe the guy gets away. And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm going to hear it when I watch the films now because I didn't, you know. And when I said, well, coach, I didn't think I was going to hit him in the head. You know, that's to me, that's a dynamic.
Yeah.
I would that in that meeting room where, you know, you're trying to get a guy playing at the highest level he can,
sure,
make corrections. When you know a guy, you know what he's doing.
Sure.
He gets called for it or there's a penalty or whatever. And as a coach, I don't think it's in a coach to go, hey, that's all right. But, you know, I don't know how you handle that.
No, but there are. There's going to be times where no one wants the penalty.
Right.
But there's certainly ones
where
you just
say,
described.
Look, I understand.
Hey, you were doing everything right. You were trying to do it right, and it didn't work out.
You did exactly what I would want you to do. It didn't work out.
Next
look,
play.
Let's move on.
Yeah, let's not overkill it.
Yeah.
I agree with you. And there's, trust me, that happens.
Oh, no. I'm sure it happens a lot.
It's tough for a coach as well.
That's the first thing. When these rules came out, the first thing I thought was, I can imagine telling a coach, well, I thought if I hit him, I was going to get a penalty for targeting, so I didn't do it.
Right.
What?
Could you imagine?
And meanwhile, he's running 30 yards down the field.
No, I couldn't imagine.
No,
definitely there's some gray area there.
Speaking of Walt Aiken, someone F fins up. Walt Aiken had a great year. What does he need to do next season?
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
Let me kind of broaden it a little bit.
Yeah.
Got a lot of guys that got a lot of playing time this year. Tony Lippett, who came in.
Yep.
And injury earlier on to Xavien Howard. He got a lot of valuable work during the course of the season. A lot of valuable experience. Walt Aiken, another guy that got a lot of playing time in their valuable experience. Guys like the two linebackers, Spencer Paysinger,
Neville Hewitt.
Yep. And a number of guys, Michael, guys in the offensive line, Steen and Urbeck.
Yep.
You had a lot of young guys on this football team that didn't have a lot of experience. Certainly over the course of this year, got a lot of experience, got a lot of valuable playing time, and improved their confidence as well as their play.
Sure.
That's got to be something that you guys look at and have to feel very, very good about.
No doubt. I'll start with Walt real quick and then get to the second point. Walt had a tremendous second half of the season.
Yeah.
You know, you really look at his second half of the year, and he made more plays and big plays than you could count. And he really did a great job. I mean, I think one of the things that Walt has to do to just continue is his preparation, his all that stuff, and he'll continue to play well. To your point about the experience thing, it's so true. I mean, we won a lot of games with people injured.
Yeah.
We won a lot of football games with, you know, right down from Matt Moore right on through where, you know, and Matt obviously was a little bit more of an experienced guy, but we had a lot of young players that had to play significant time.
Yep.
And we won games. You know, Mike Hall had to step in and start a game. And when Kiko was down, Neville played a ton. Mm-hmm. Like you said, offensive line-wise, when Pouncey was out, you had guys like Steen, like you said, stepped in. And so that happened across the board. We had a lot of young players that had to play a lot of plays for us. Lippett, McCain, you know, you mentioned Mike Thomas, Walt Aikens. And so, you know, when you come back and start over, when you reset and get back to 90 guys, what does it do? Well, it puts you in a situation where you have a lot of guys that have experienced.
And nothing else, it raises the level of your depth.
No question.
The quality of your depth, because you've had guys like a guy like Tony Lippett playing in games, you know, where the game's on the line and you're standing out there having to make plays.
Sure.
I don't know how, I don't care how much you work on it on the practice field. You can never duplicate that experience on a Sunday afternoon in a game, 80,000 people standing there, and they're trying to throw the ball right at your face.
Yeah, right at you. And they're coming at you when they come in off the bench, that's for sure. And there's no doubt. And really, I mean, take it even a step further, when those guys had to play, from my standpoint on special teams, you had guys like Lafayette Pitts, Rashawn Scott, some of these other guys that had to get now, Jordan Lucas, just the guys that are coming to mind that had to step up and play more special teams plays. And so everybody gained more experience. Listen, it wasn't ideal. No one wanted those guys to get hurt, those key players to get injured. But because they did and because these guys got some more experience, it really now makes playing time coming into this season even more competitive because guys have now do have experience. And if we get into that situation again, hopefully not through injury, you're looking at guys now that are a lot more experienced.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing. The other thing is, you know, going to that playoff game, right, looking at the stat, you have 40 guys that had never played in a playoff game. 40 guys. I mean, that's, you talk about the youth of your football team, 40 guys.
Yeah.
Now you got 40 guys that have played in the playoff game. Not that all 40 are going to be back next year. I mean, with the turnover rate, not for I don't know what the turnover rate's 30 to 40% per team in this league now.
Yeah.
No matter what happens.
No matter
what. Just coming and going no matter what each and every time. But certainly to have those guys with that experience. So a lot of good things to build on this offseason from this past year. And it's funny, as I walk around and I see people now, the feeling about this football team in the community is raised to a whole different level, and it's a lot more Dolphin shirts around. Guys calling in. It's the only thing is everyone wants these back.
Oh, the old school.
Everyone wants the old school back. Someone sent in and asked and said they like your throwback shirt.
Yeah,
there,
no, so. I'm a big fan. Big fan of the throwbacks. I enjoy them too.
Coach, it's a pleasure having you with us.
Yeah, Bo,
always a pleasure, man.
Always good. Appreciate
you.
You
guys got a busy offseason. The combine coming up, but we're looking forward to another big year.
Same, man.
This year. It was fun. It was certainly a lot of fun this year. A lot of excitement, a lot of fun, a lot of enjoyment.
Thanks to Aquafina again.
I love the boys at Aquafina. All right, we're going to be back here on Friday, so get your questions in, get them ready to go. We'll see you. I think Joe Rose may be in for that. It's always a good time. Always trouble when Joe comes in.
I had to go before him. That's good thing. I had to go after him.
That's right. All right, we'll catch you on Friday. Take it easy.